Okay, you're recording.
Yeah. All right. So we are going to move on to case 2257. That's section 3, number 2, scheduled for 11:30. That's Ryan Bunce, DVM. So this is the time and place scheduled for the interview, the informal interview of Dr. Bunce in case number 2257. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it in ARS 32-2234. Dr. Bunce, please come forward and introduce yourself and your counsel. No, there is no counsel, I'm sorry.
Hello, I'm Dr. Bunce.
Thank you. Dr. Bunce, you've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censoring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. And Dr. Nosley, you're leading this case. You can please give us a brief summary.
Okay, thank you. On October 21st, 2021, Ginger, an 11-year-old female corgi, was presented to the respondent due to a swollen, bloody eye. The dog was examined due to the dog attempting to bite. The respondent obtained permission to sedate the dog. Diagnostics were performed, and the dog was diagnosed with a corneal ulcer in the left eye. Upon discharge, the complainants expressed concerns with the dog's respirations, and the respondent indicated that the dog had been panting upon presentation, and her appearance and mentation were likely related to the sedatives. The complainants were instructed to monitor the dog and call if they had concerns. The complainants reported that after an hour after arriving home, the dog passed away.
All right, thank you. Dr. Bunce, at this time I'd like to swear you in. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
All right. Dr. Bunce, we'd now like to give you the opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
Yeah, so Ginger came in with, for an issue with the eye. It was very swollen. She was panting pretty heavily. She came in before I came on my shift. She was evaluated by a colleague and given an analgesic injection of buprenorphine. When I came on, after I finished my soaps for my inpatients, I examined Ginger. And she was difficult to examine because she wouldn't get up. She was panting heavily, and she did try to bite when trying to perform a thorough physical exam. I was able to auscultate her and kind of look at the eye grossly. Recommended sedation to do, the ophthalmic diagnostics, which we got approval for. And my main concern with the case is that her on exit, Ginger, her signs weren't consistent with the level of sedation that I had given. It was very minimal in my sedation and analgesic drugs that I gave, and so that didn't really fit with me. But I kind of went with, I made a judgment call, that her signs on exit were from, dysphoria from the buprenorphine. And so I went ahead and discussed discharges and tried to discharge the patient. And the owner's main concern, from my understanding, was that I was sending home an NSAID instead of a steroid. And they requested that I come back in the room to talk about prescribing a steroid instead, which I came in and discussed. They did say that the eye seemed worse and that they they thought that a steroid was, you know, was better fit based on how severe that I had gotten. At any rate, went forward and I looked at her in the room and, you know, I was concerned. But I went forward with discharges. I thought that it was probably from the medications. But in hindsight, you know, it didn't sit right with me, and I think I should have voiced that further to the owners. But where we went from there, it's hard to say.
Thank you. I would now like to ask the board members if they have any questions for Dr. Bunce. And Dr. Nosley, you're...
Yeah. Hello. Some questions regarding your exam and your sedated exam on October 22nd, 2021. When you came on and the cases were lined up for you, basically, is what I understand, and then you approached Ginger's kennel at that point, and she didn't really respond to you.
She was aware. I mean, she was conscious. When I opened the door, she didn't really acknowledge me opening the kennel and going to listen to her until, you know, I went to palpate her abdomen. That's when she kind of turned to bite me.
So the record indicates QAR. I assume that means quiet, alert, and responsive. Okay. When you did your exam prior to sedation, did you examine her gait?
I was able to get up and get her up to watch her.
She wasn't walking around for you, so you couldn't determine if there was a ataxia or look for CP deficits or anything, because she wouldn't move. Right. She wouldn't move for you. Okay. Can you describe the bloody discharge? How much?
It was really a scleral hemorrhage. There wasn't any bloody discharge.
Okay, all right. And you said in your record that there was minimal to no retropulsion of the eye.
Under the sedation,
With a digital. So at that point in time, under the sedation, which you described as pretty profound, error sedation, did you look behind the last molar on that side?
I did not.
Look for retrobulbar abscess or hemorrhage or behind the eye, as indicated behind the last molar. Okay. In your description of the ulcer, you described it as being central, superficial, and 3 to 4 millimeters. In your opinion, was that consistent with the degree of chemosis, the scleral hemorrhage, and the periocular swelling? That small ulcer that you described?
No, in hindsight, it seemed like an odd amount of swelling for an ulcer. Yeah.
And you were concerned enough that to the owner you stated that there was concern for possible proptosis and need for nucleation.
Yeah. So I think
appearance. So were you concerned for trauma to this dog other than to the eye? I'm referring to skull trauma, et cetera, that type of thing.
No, not based on the history that I was given.
Okay, the history of maybe cats in the house and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was more it's a concern for like a cat scratch as opposed to like a blunt force trauma.
Would you say that the ulcer would be what you would expect to see with a cat scratch, with a nail? Okay, did you do an otoscopic exam under sedation?
I tried to, it was difficult.
It was
Yeah. I mean, I looked at the anterior chamber and it's hard to examine the back of the eye.
Otoscopic.
Oh, otoscopic, sorry. I did not.
You did, on the infected side or the other side, okay. You gave a very low dose of the dexmedetomidine and midazolam. Were you concerned about the degree of sedation that those very low doses caused? They described it as profound.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. And the slow recovery, the wide eye dysphoria?
Yes.
Okay. What was the Was the elevated lactate concerning?
A little bit, but it wasn't high enough to be too concerning to me.
Yeah. Doing emergency, I don't do lactates that much, but it was elevated. And is trauma one of the reasons that it could be elevated?
It could be.
But it was elevated very slightly. And then moving to the discharge, the owners asked to talk to you because they were concerned about how Ginger looked to them. Were you aware that Ginger had to be carried into the exam room?
I was.
Do you have an explanation as to why this was, you reversed the dexmetomidine and had a very low dose of midazolam on board? Buprenorphine was 6 hours early. Do you know why she didn't seem to want to walk?
Well, I had thought that it was, you know, because of the medications, even though they were a low dose, and because of her body condition, because of the stress of being in the hospital and how long she was in the hospital.
Okay. And then I'm assuming she didn't walk in the exam room at discharge either. She
no.
didn't walk. Okay. And concerning the breathing, you were not concerned about her respiration at discharge?
I mean, I made a judgment call that it was from the stress and the sedation and dysphoria. Yeah. She was like that before I even came into the building. You know, she came in panting at least.
And there was a description of the admitting bed or the staff or
on the records. The triage notes that said she was panting.
Yeah,
and then when I came in, she'd only gotten the buprenorphine, and she was panting pretty heavily on my exam.
So that was based on the notes saying she was panting?
Correct.
Okay. That's all I have.
Does anybody else have any additional questions this time?
So it was the first time you had actual communication with the owner at the time of discharge?
No, it was when I called them after my exam. I called and spoke to the owners to make recommendations and go over my findings.
And then when you mean at that point in time you went over the findings of the current clinical ulcer?
No, that's just my exam. And then I recommended sedation for the ophthalmic diagnostics and blood work.
So did you talk to him after that?
Yes.
And
then again, I called them with the results, and then they came in to, you know, the triage nurse, the discharge nurse went over discharges, and then they requested to speak with me. And so I spoke with them a third time.
And then, did you have any communication with him after the dog passed away?
No.
I don't have any additional questions.
Thank you. Does anybody else have any additional questions? Okay. All right, thank you very much. You can step back. And we have the complainant here, Fred and Monique Goldman. Is that correct? If you'd like to address the board.
You both can come up if you'd like to sit up here.
If you could both introduce yourselves for the record, please.
I'm Fred Goldman.
Monique Goldman.
All right, thank you. And you are the complainants in this case?
Yes, we are.
All right. We've read the materials you provided. You may now address the board.
We tried to contact the doctors at the emergency hospital numerous times, and we were put off numerous times by the whoever's at the gates. They wouldn't let us talk to any doctors there until finally, about 2-3 weeks later, the doctor that runs the place, or the person that owns the place, Dr. Sanders, called us back. We had very little satisfaction from what he had to say. Doctor said that the Ginger had a corneal abrasion. She did not have corneal abrasion. She never mentioned to me that yet she had a corneal abrasion, only that he did a force, a dime in the eye to look for a corneal abrasion. Never told us that the dog had a corneal abrasion. Ginger walked into the hospital.
She not was panting. Not panting.
She was not panting. She walked into the hospital. When we, 5-6 hours later, whenever it was when we went to pick her up, she was carried out into the waiting room where we were called, and she was handed to us. Medication was, the tech tried to explain the medication. She couldn't pronounce the medication. And I think it may have been gabapentin. I don't really know at this point. But she couldn't even pronounce the medication. I asked, why is Ginger unable to walk? Why is she breathing the way she is? She said, it's from the sedation. I said, I need to speak to the doctor. And she said, she gave me Ginger, I held Ginger, and she went to get the doctor. It took about 10 minutes before he came out. Told me that the breathing and the fact that she couldn't breathe, couldn't walk, was from the sedation. And that you should make a follow-up appointment in 24 to 48 hours. Which, by the way, the hospital did not have any openings for the next coming week. We live in Connecticut most of the year. Our vets are in Connecticut. We actually flew in for this hearing. And the... Any other points? Yeah, she shouldn't have been discharged to us without opportunity to further investigate why she had blood in her eye. It could have been from something in her brain or cerebral hemorrhage. There was no offer of MRI, CAT scan, any further imaging. And the notes I read the notes that were was submitted here, and they're quite thorough. I was a registered nurse for 45 years before I retired, spending the last 40 years as director of nursing at several major hospitals in New York City. I've been through lots of investigations. And the one thing that every investigator always asks, even with a pile of papers, is let me see the timestamp from the computer. I want to know when this information was entered into the computer, not the date that the writer put on it and the time that the writer put it, but I want to see the timestamp. I want to see if this was written 5 days after the event, 24 hours after the event, or at the time of the event. It's very easy to backlog notes and make everything look crystal clear. It wasn't crystal clear. Ginger was discharged. She shouldn't have been discharged to us. There should have been further testing, and she shouldn't have died in an hour after leaving. And as you said that, you know, you're doing now, you know, your vets are taught to prevent legal to lawsuits. I don't want to sue anybody. I'm not interested in the money. You know, this was negligence. And, you know, it's not just in the veterinarian world, it's in the real world too. You know, we all go to doctors, we all get tested, most of our tests hopefully come back negative. It's the same thing in veterinarian care. It's the same thing. What you described is what I've been dealing with for 20 years. I appreciate you listening to us.
Thank you very much. Did you want to say anything?
I'm good.
Okay, thank you. Did any board members have questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, not done yet. We got some questions, so.
Yes.
You're first, sorry.
just a few questions for you. What was Ginger's environment between the time her eye was observed as normal and when the bloody swollen eye was observed? Where was she? Did she go outside?
We helped our daughter, who has four foster children in her house, in a large house in Maricopa, that we have with another dog, a Burmese Mountain dog, about 100 pounds, and three cats. We all get along wonderfully in that household.
And the eye was normal, and then that
she,
afternoon
it was. We have a separate apartment in that house, mm-hmm. A big house. We have our own space in the house. She was in that space, but when I when I discovered the bleeding eye, and it was protruding.
So she was separated from the other?
Yeah, she was with me. She's always with me.
Okay, but, and that history was then, was given to the clinic?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And you said that Ginger walked into the clinic.
Yes.
Absolutely. Did she walk out?
No.
She did not.
So how did you get her?
Carried her.
You carried her?
Carried her.
She's a corgi. She's not very big.
Okay. So have you ever just observed Ginger panting, as dogs
never.
Do?
Never.
She never panted?
Never.
No, she
never.
Doesn't. No.
Even when she exerted herself, she never
She never
panted.
Really exerted herself.
Yeah.
She's a corgi. They don't exert themselves.
They were. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so she really didn't pant much.
No.
What I was asking is panting versus what you describe as hyperventilating. So describe that to me.
She couldn't catch her breath. I mean, it's a fine line, but it wasn't.
Sure.
I mean, we all, you know, we deal with dogs all the time. It's not from panting after running around in the yard. It was.
Would you describe it as?
Like more shallow.
Difficult breathing?
Yeah, like shallow, unable to catch your breath, and shallow.
And that was your concern?
Absolutely. That's why we asked to speak to the vet initially before we left the hospital.
And then briefly just describe how Ginger was doing when you got her home and she passed. What did she do?
We put her in her doggy bed.
She was in
the
bed.
Side of our bed. And kept an eye on her, and then that was it.
Did that abnormal breathing continue? Or did
yes.
She continued to
I
have that.
I never saw it stop.
At rest in the bed. That's all I have.
Just a clarification question real quick.
Yeah.
So Dr. Nosley asked you, like I said, she was separated from the other animals when you first noticed this issue. How was her attitude at that point? Was she still normal, happy, or was she seem like painful, tired? What did you see when you saw her eye was weird?
She jumped into the car. She seemed okay.
So the eye just looked weird?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it was more than...
Well,
it was bold.
Weird, but yeah, but I mean...
It was bulging.
But she didn't seem like she was in overt pain or suffering, I guess, at that point.
No.
She just was...
She wasn't scratching at it. She wasn't whining. Yeah, she wasn't doing any of that.
She wasn't crying.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, my questions are not from the complaint they're posing for board discussion.
Gotcha, okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
So I think I heard in your initial statement that you said the doctor called and said it was not a corneal abrasion.
It was not a corneal abrasion.
That's what he said.
That's what he said.
And what did he say it was?
He didn't.
So he didn't tell you what he thought was going on with the eye?
No.
And then when you came to pick up, were the medications that were dispensed explained as to what they were going to treat if we didn't know what it was?
It was a pain medication and it was an antibiotic ointment.
And you didn't... And maybe you did ask,
I
but did you say what was
he said it was a
well?
Corneal abrasion, I would have, that would have hit. You know, my concern was, why'd you sedate him? I put dye in hundreds of violent teenagers in my career. That's what I did. I worked with violent teenagers. And I put dyes in kids' eyes all the time. Sedate a dog to do an optical... I don't know.
But regardless, he said that in your recollection was this
was
not a corneal abrasion,
right.
But we didn't get any answer as to why the dog's eye was out popping out of its head.
No.
Okay. I don't have any additional questions. Thank you.
So I have a question. When Ginger would go to the vet in the past, how did she do at the vet?
She did fine at the vet. At the groomers, she had to be muzzled, I think, her nails. But that was it. But she always did fine at the vets.
Okay, so they didn't typically muzzle her at the vet, or she didn't get snippy?
No, she didn't. No, the only ones that ever muzzled her was the groomer.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else have any additional questions?
I have one other. When you expressed concern about the breathing at pickup, did you get any options as far as her staying there?
The doctor said to me when I asked him, what's this, why is she breathing like this? He said to me, she came that way. He said to me, she came that way. And she did not, I was.
Did you say, no, why she didn't?
Yeah. Then after that, I was speechless. It was devastating to see that she couldn't walk, that I was holding her at this point in my arms. She was panting, and he tells me she came that way. And I don't know when that happened. When in this time period, she was there from 5 o'clock to midnight, when did that breathing start? She didn't come that way. If she had come that way, it would be in the notes, right? Because everything else I said was there. So she didn't come in breathing like that. When did that happen? And why did it happen? And why wasn't something done to help her? I can't tell you how horrible it was to bring my dog home and watch her die.
We're very sorry for your loss.
Yes, sorry, very
I'm
sorry.
I'm sure it's hard
loss.
To answer the questions, but thank you for
Somebody else have any questions?
Not of them. For board discussion, I do.
We'll get you in that.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much. You can step back.
Thank you.
And Dr. Bunce, do you have any additional remarks or questions you would like to ask?
Not at this time.
Okay. Thank you. And the board doesn't have any additional questions for Dr. Bunce?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. So Dr. Nosley, we'll let you head off.
Okay. So in this very unfortunate case, the first thing I would look at is, was anything with the case management by the respondent not done properly, affecting the patient adversely, or contributing to the unexpected death? I can't see that there was anything done that would contribute to that. There was definitely a focus on this corneal ulcer, whether we use ulcer or abrasion, as kind of almost sounds like that's the major negative finding here, or the better major problem we need to address. The sedation might very well have been appropriate to do a thorough exam on an eye. Can be tough in the best patient, and especially if you've got maybe a bloody discharge, as the owners described it, and this amount of chemosis, and he needed to see what was going on with the eye. And in a dog, I think that was entirely appropriate. The triage person giving the pain medication, I think that was entirely appropriate. The diagnostics and treatments concerning the corneal problem, I think, was appropriate. And then the second question I would ask, well, was anything missed at this visit? Did we miss something that then ultimately affected the patient and led to her passing away? Was there an underlying condition? Were there other abnormalities other than the eye? I have a professor once told me, remember there's a dog attached to every broken leg. So you don't focus in on one issue and totally discount everything else. I'm not saying he totally did, but you know, it has to be complete, and especially in a case like this where things are not adding up. The minor nature of the ulcer does not seem to be consistent with the other abnormalities, the periorbital swelling, the severe chemosis, not able to retropulse the globe. None of that really fits with the description of this minor ulcer. The respondent's statement that the globe could proptose or require nucleation tells me he's very, very concerned about this eye, more so than a corneal ulcer, but that was not communicated. It doesn't appear at least satisfactorily to the owner. So my questions are, was there head trauma? You know, should we have considered skull radiographs? Should have been referred for a neurological consult? Or at the minimum, further monitoring? Maybe we ought to hang on to this dog and monitor it for a while. And then you move to the circumstances surrounding the discharge. The investigative committee had a long discussion on this, and one of the members was really concerned about that. Was proper assessment of the patient at that time? I questioned, why didn't Ginger walk into the room? Can we blame that all on the sedation? Maybe, but these are low doses. And all we have on board really at that point is maybe some buprenorphine 6 hours early, and maybe a very low dose, and a very low dose of midazolam. Is that consistent with how the dog was behaving at discharge? I question that. Why didn't Ginger walk into the room? Was there true dyspnea going on, or was this just a panting dog? And the respondent indicated she was dysphoric. Dysphoric, I guess, due to the midazolam. So the effects of the drugs, it's possible, but I question that, especially the time and the doses. Did they account for the heavy panting, not walking, and not responding? I question that. So that's kind of the way I see the case, and so I'd like to hear everybody else's opinions.
Does it sound like you had questions?
Yes, I have a few questions.
You have a
thank
question.
You. Of the veterinarians on the board, based on your expertise, could the injection given by Dr. Butler interacted with the medications given by Dr. Bunce?
Interact in
adversely.
You mean
either exacerbate the effect of the sedation.
You're referring to the combination of the buprenorphine
given
initially and then
the midazolam and
later.
Yes.
Well, they certainly can be given together.
Okay.
They're given as pre-medications together at the same time.
Okay.
And these weren't at the same time. Can they affect each other in terms of sedation?
Yeah.
Sure.
Because my impression from the testimony is that Ginger was fine when she was brought in, but in between the time she was brought in and Dr. Bunce saw Ginger for the first time, she was not okay. She was panting, she had to be careful, she couldn't walk, and the thing that transpired in between was the injection by Dr. Butler.
Right.
So that tends to point me in that direction.
That's the question, very well framed, was what the difference between how she came in and how she left, was that due to these drugs, or was there something else going on with her? Her condition was declining due to some underlying condition that we don't know what that might have been. That's the question.
And I also share Dr. Dowell's concern about discharging a patient that was still apparently somewhat profoundly sedated.
But how much of it do you guys consider, like they said, that, you know, so often our pets are nervous and anxious and everything.
Sure.
So, I mean,
it's a factor.
Right.
And all we can do is go by what we see.
Right.
And that definitely can be a factor.
Right.
In other words, panting because she's nervous.
Right. Send them home and then they improve, or
obviously
in this case, it's not what happened. So,
sometimes the best place for them is home.
Right, exactly.
But in this case, maybe watching her for a while, at a minimum.
Right.
Might have been a good idea.
Yes.
Well, there's a difference between the dog showing anxiety in the clinic, like anxiousness in the clinic, versus truly having trouble sleeping.
Right. Right.
Like, there is a difference between those two things that can sometimes be hard to tell, but this dog didn't come in that way. Now, I don't know at the time that Dr. Bunce saw this dog that the dog wasn't already that way. Because there was a couple hours delay.
Couple hours, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, maybe he's right in that, no, the first time I saw her, she looked like this, right? I don't know. I don't know when that started. Sure. There was a couple hours before we ever even got to her.
Yes.
That she could have gotten herself worked up or whatever and gotten that way.
And just to kind of go back to Ms. Solomon's question about the buprenorphine, that's a pretty darn safe medication, which is why it's used a lot. Now, it may not be strong enough in a lot of cases, in my opinion, but it's practically impossible, if not impossible, to overdose on it. So it's different than like morphines and hydromorphone and fentanyls. Buprenorphine is actually, it's a different type of opioid drug, but it actually reverses itself. So the now or newer studies and everything show basically you will get a sedative effect up into a certain point, and then the more drug you give, it's going to extend it out. It's not going to make them worse. So it's a very safe. I wouldn't think that would cause any problems there. I do have some questions. I shouldn't say questions, but like I said, when we talk about the eye, is there head trauma and something going on? And is dextromethorphan a great drug for that? Yeah, I mean that's a question there. But we also had the tonometry done, and the left eye was about 23. It's not screaming head trauma and increased intracranial pressure, because you are going to have the direct correlation between intraocular pressure and intracranial pressure. It's a direct correlation. But that doesn't mean that we couldn't have had some kind of thing that's worsening. And it sounds like there was some other underlying issue. My other question is around the blood work itself. I mean, there's a high neutrophil count. Remember, around 18,000, mm-hmm. And was that even addressed? I mean, is there an infection? There's something going on here, and I'm wondering, is there something there that was missed, or is that just a round crop to the sky?
In this circumstance, to stress at that point, stress would great.
Yeah, but that's going to be a lymphopenia. I mean, you're not going to see like an 18,000, I wouldn't think, but if you had a retrobulbar abscess,
right,
that you couldn't retropulse that eye, and that's going to be basically a direct abscess to the brain at that point. I mean, it just goes right up that optic nerve, and it's in the brain. I wonder, is there something going on there? So I'm wondering if that was now.
And
again, is that...
And he didn't look back there.
Yeah. So that's... Or was there a stick or something that was jumped up there?
Right.
But that's kind of where I'm thinking there was something more in that regard going on. Yeah, there was a problem with the eye, but coupling with that, was there some kind of infection that potentially could have just gotten into the brain and caused some kind of meningitis, encephalitis, yeah, and caused that death?
Retrobulbar, then brain.
Yeah. And that,
does
that would
happen
be my
really
thought.
Fast?
Yeah. It can be crazy fast. So again, was there anything that was done wrong that would have worsened that? Not necessarily. I mean, even if you start antibiotics to do stuff, that's a bad case. But was it also something like that missed? And that's kind of where my thought is it was something else missed.
Something missed.
Mm-hmm. You remind me, was there a necropsy offered or declined, or I can't remember on this one?
I don't think I saw anything around that one.
I'm trying to remember.
You know, that didn't stick out in my mind anymore, so I don't think it was discussed. So that's kind of my thought, is I think there's probably something like that going on, some kind of infection or retrobulbar abscess. And again, the medicine portion, diagnostic testing, I don't think anything was done wrong there, but was there a diagnosis missed? And that's my sticking point right now. And again, I don't know about that because I can't say that's what happened. Okay. But I just see other things that with the blood work, I'm like, why was that not really fully addressed?
Okay.
So that's just my concern. I don't have any thoughts on that.
No,
that's all speculation.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That's all
like,
speculation.
Even if that's what it is,
yeah,
we don't know for sure. We have no way of saying that. No. I don't think what was done was wrong, except for the fact that I've just never seen a corneal ulcer have signs quite like that. And so I would have been going, this isn't fitting, right? Maybe there was a corneal ulcer, but that's not the only thing going on here. And I don't think that was explained. I mean, the owners didn't even think it was corneal ulcer. So I think that's where I have concern, is that there was something going on. We didn't quite figure out what it was. We all agree, even the doctor involved, that this wasn't presenting like a typical corneal ulcer. We treated it as such, but the dog continued to decline, and we had some pretty severe signs at pickup.
That's my thing, is
that I feel like, man.
Can we blame that on Brian Skinner, is the question. Because that's the only explanation, other than something else going on.
And even if you, even if the owner said, I gotta pick up my dog, I don't want to leave it here overnight, whatever, you could say, okay, this might be related to drugs, here's what I want you to watch for. If you weren't 100% sure, and you're probably never going to be, that that was related to the drugs, you could have said, why don't we just keep the dog overnight?
Right.
Let us monitor the dog for another couple hours. Not,
at a minimum.
Not reacting to the drugs the way we would expect or whatever. Like, there was, and we still don't know what's going on here. Like, let's step back and say the reason you came in is this eye issue, the bleeding from the eye, the proptosed eye, the bulging eye, whatever you want to call it. We don't have an answer to that, and we have signs that we don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I go. I just feel like something more, what was done wasn't wrong, but something more should have been.
Even if
it was just one.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, again, with my speculation and all that and the eye and the infection and all of that, who knows? But again, should that animal have been discharged? It doesn't seem like we were stable enough for discharge. Right. And that's kind of the thing that sticks with me is, yeah, was there a misdiagnosis? Who knows? But should the dog have been discharged? And I don't know if we were stable enough, or at least if we relayed the information to the owner saying we're not stable and we probably need to go somewhere else or something. And I, that doesn't sound like that was said. But yeah, it just that does not look like a stable discharge to me. And that's the crux of everything, I think. Yeah, there's speculation about everything else, but was that dog, or should that dog have been discharged in that condition without the owner basically fully aware, knowing AMA coming out?
And I appreciate that the vet even said that he, you know, looking back now, he, you know, he thought that and realizes that.
And a letter of concern about discharging this way.
Because how he saw the patient was similar to how it was discharged. I mean, that's hard. I mean, so it's and that's something we're going to see with triaging and all these things. An animal sitting there for a few hours, it's like things can change. So
it's not your own pet. You don't know how they're.
So it's definitely, I don't think that the dog should have been discharged, but when we look back to this is how he accepted the case, we're pretty similar.
It's hard because it was such a fast death after getting home.
Yeah.
You know, so often we see, you know, the next day or a couple days later, but it's like, my gosh, within an hour.
There's definitely issues.
And if the dog hadn't been discharged, unfortunately, the outcome may well have been the same.
Right.
Yeah.
But the question I think before us is, was the discharge appropriate at that time with the dog not being stable?
And that's that, and that's where my major concern is around there. So.
Okay. Well, let's start here. I would make a motion in this case to find a violation of 3222.3211, the gross negligence for failure to recognize the possible problems other than the corneal ulcer and follow up appropriately, and failure to recognize and address the distress exhibited at the release of the patient.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion around that? All right, we'll do a...
question. I don't know. Okay. No.
All right, we can do
it's
a
just like gross negligence
vote.
One again, so
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah,
can
yeah,
I go
last? Okay.
Ms. Traeger?
I think I'm just going to go with nay.
Ms. Frost? Nay. Dr. James?
Nay.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Nay.
Dr. Wright?
Nay.
5-2 does not pass.
So.
So we're going to do a different violation or?
There's definitely issues here.
Right, I agree with that.
Something.
And the reason why I would say nay on that is just because I don't know the condition of this dog when he first saw it, and it's giving me a little bit of qualms that maybe he thought that was normal behavior for the dog, or at least more normal than what it probably was.
So it'd be like professional acceptable procedures.
Then I'd like to make a motion that we issue a letter of concern, basically for the same reasons, that there should have been more follow-up on the condition of the dog and the failure to recognize and address the distress exhibited at the release of the patient.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Nosley, can I confirm, so you want to dismiss the case and issue a letter of concern versus doing a different violation?
Correct.
So you, okay.
Do we feel though?
Because there are standards of practice. I mean, you could do like an AACR 311-501. I know the motion's made, but again, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess I just
and I'm good with that.
I feel like
we got to find where we're at.
Yeah, it's where.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're. So it's a violation. I'm just not so sure. Yeah,
maybe this is the best way for the board to figure that out by saying letter of concern is not where we're going.
Right. All right. Did we have a second?
So, yeah, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Yeah.
And that motion will fail. Do we have another motion?
Help me out with this one, Dr. Gann.
Yeah. So I'll make a motion that we find a violation of 3222-3212 as it relates to R311-5011 for both professionally acceptable procedures, but also for, I don't even want to say professional scientific knowledge, because I don't think it's...
You need to create a signature. The very first one.
Yeah, but I don't know that he wasn't. I think the issue that I'm having, like, maybe it's just under professionally acceptable procedures, is we still had an issue we didn't have resolved. And I think he knew that. I think he knew that this is not just an ulcer. This is not just an ulcer. And we didn't go anywhere from there. So that to me, that's not professionally acceptable. We should have said, there's something else that I think is going on here. We have an ulcer that might be secondary to what's going on, but we haven't figured out what's going on, and now we have these abnormal signs at pickup that we aren't quite sure, we probably should monitor, and we didn't. So I'd say motion, but I guess I would say it's for professionally acceptable for procedures for fully explaining the diagnosis and what may potentially still be going on that we're not aware of, and two, sending the dog home in a condition that we didn't understand why the dog was acting that way.
Thank you.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All right, we'll do a roll call vote, please.
Ms. Rager?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Motion passes.
All right, so the board has voted to find a violation in 2257. At next month's meeting, the board will consider adopting proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law, and after doing so, we'll discuss and adopt disciplinary action. If you have any questions, please call the board's executive director, Victoria Whitmore, at the board's office. This concludes this informal interview. Thank you.
Do you want to take a break?
Yes, we'll take a little bio break. And then we'll see our 2249 after that.